Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, a not-for-profit cooperative that contracts with over 39,000 healthcare providers on its employers' behalf to help them access healthcare. The-Alliance.org.
It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. Good morning. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and let's get right to it. If you have not met her yet, please let me introduce you to one of this year's Teachers of the Year in Wisconsin. Lori Donns has been a science teacher at Superior High School for more than 25 years, and she was recently named one of Wisconsin's Teachers of the Year by the State Department of Public Instruction. Lori, welcome to the Ideas Network, and congratulations.
Well, thank you, Lee. Thank you for having me on the radio this morning.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And let's take us back to when you found out you were one of the five Wisconsin Teachers of the Year. How did you end up finding out, Lori?
Well, it was a total surprise, Lee. I finished my classes at the high school. I teach two morning classes at Superior High School. And then I had a group out at our school forest. I also teach out there. And so I went to meet our group at the school forest. And when I arrived, there was a very large group of people out there waiting for me, unbeknownst to me. And it was announced that I was one of Wisconsin's State Science Teachers of the Year.
So you had your students out there. You had the state superintendent, Jill Underley, out there to award that. And you know, what does this mean to you after 25 years in the classroom? And as you mentioned, at the school forest as well at Superior High School, Lori?
Well, I'll tell you what, Lee, it's hard to put into words. I'm still processing a lot of all that's happened in the past week, but obviously I just feel tremendously honored. It's humbling. I said to some people, it's a little embarrassing. There are so many teachers doing so many good things in the state, you know, and so I've asked, you know, why me many times, but it's just tremendously exciting. And I'm proud. I'm proud to have received this award. I'm humbled by receiving it. It's exciting. So there are many emotions running through me right now.
Yeah. And I'd be interested in knowing, because you mentioned the school forest, and when I was in school, we didn't have a forest. So when you talk about why me, the first thing I think of is what little I know about Lori Donns is she's got a school forest up there at Superior High School. Tell us about it.
Well, we do. And there are really many districts in the state that have school forests, Lee. This program was started in Wisconsin, actually, and school forests are becoming very, very popular nationally with a push for outdoor education. Superior School Forest has been around since at least the early 70s. If I know my history here well, I think I'm the fourth teacher to work at our school forest. It's located about 20 miles south of Superior. It's huge. We have approximately 700 acres out there, and the teachers in our district just do a tremendous job of using that site to teach every subject and grade level that we have here in the district. So it's wonderful.
Superior High School science teacher Lori Donns, one of this year's Wisconsin Teachers of the Year, and we're talking about her work as an educator. And if you went to Superior High School, if you know Lori Donns, 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation, or you can email us ideas@wpr.org. And you talk about a little bit of the history of Superior High School, Lori Donns, and you should know a little bit of this because you were also a graduate of a Superior High School. So from graduate to student, do you remember some of your teachers from Superior High School back when you were a student, Lori?
Oh, I remember many of my teachers, Lee. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. It was very strange. I actually, when I graduated from UW Superior also, so, you know, go Yellow Jackets. They have an awesome program up here also. I then moved to Neenah, Wisconsin and taught there for a couple of years, six, I think. And then I moved back to Superior, and it was really strange initially as a new teacher here in Superior working with the teachers that I had when I was a student, and I still wanted to call them by their last names. And so it was a strange transition, but a wonderful one.
Because I remember my teachers' names too. But the other question I had for you, Lori Donns, is do you remember your students' names? I mean, you've been teaching at Superior High School since 1996. You remember some of the kids that sat in your classrooms, both indoors and out?
Oh, many, many of them. You're putting me on the spot a little bit, Lee, because, you know, you think over that many years of teaching and how many hundreds of students I've taught, but it's remarkable how many students I do remember. What was difficult, or what's difficult sometimes, is when I first started teaching in Superior, I taught middle school. And so now at the school forest, occasionally I'll have these adult parents who are coming to the school for chaperoning their children, and they will look me in the eye and say, "Do you remember me?" Now I'm picturing, you know, an eighth grader
right.
who is now an adult. Some of the men now have beards and that.
It's not easy.
But as soon as I see a smile, or they do tell me my name, their name, if I need that reminding, it's amazing how the memories flood back of a very specific instance that happened in the classroom or an experience. I'm sure teachers, if any teachers are listening, they can relate to that.
Yeah. From the name of our teachers to the name of our students, there are just some things in the classrooms that we just don't forget, Lori Dons. And I, you know, as one of the acknowledged teachers of the year from the Department of Public Instruction this year in Wisconsin, what was your path like to becoming a teacher, Lori?
Well, my path, I suppose in some ways was kind of traditional. I honestly did not think I would become a teacher,
Lee.
Really? I don't know if I should admit this on the radio as teacher of the year, but I will tell you this: I did not like going to school as a young child.
But isn't there something about that may have made you the teacher that you are today, though, Lori?
Maybe. I was fortunate enough to be taken outside hunting, spending a lot of time in the outdoors with my dad. Good morning, Dad, if you're out there. And Dad had me hunting and fishing and spending time outdoors from the time I could walk almost. And so when it was time to start school, the school was not as interesting to me as being outdoors and spending time with my dad. But I did well in school. I was a very good student. I thought I might work in natural resources or something. And then one of my aunts said to me at one time, I think I was in close to my third year of college, she asked if I had ever considered becoming a teacher. And that planted the seed in my head, and I am so glad I did. It's just been a wonderful, wonderful career.
Lori Dons, one of this year's Wisconsin Teachers of the Year, and we invite you to join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. And Lori, why science? What was it that moved you into the field of science and teaching others about it?
Well, I think it was just my curiosity of nature. Science is definitely more than biology. I think biology was the initial interest for me. But then when I got into college and started, you know, studying the physics and the chemistry and everything relating to the natural world and really just how wonderful it is and the curiosity it evokes, I guess it was just a natural fit for me.
And from science to technology, with a quarter century in the classroom, how have you seen technology change education, Lori Dons?
Well, Lee, I started with a blackboard when I started teaching. And colored chalk, I would use my big deal in the classroom was I loved using the colored chalk with diagrams and notes, which transitioned into whiteboards. And, you know, with the pandemic, the learning curve that all of us teachers had to go through with reaching our students virtually was just incredible. So, you know, right now I'm sitting in my classroom. I have a Newsline interactive television that I work with, in presenting lessons. I tease the kids and tell them I'm Al Roker up on my weatherboard.
Did the kids know Al Roker?
No, they do not know Al Roker. So we have to step back and explain who Al is, you know, but, we have fun. We have fun. So, it's just a process of continually learning and keeping up with what's out there.
It's been a universe. You mentioned the pandemic. And Lori, I got to ask, because it's been a challenge for everybody. But what have you learned as a teacher? What have you learned about your work during the pandemic?
Well, Lee, I only have about 20 minutes this morning. So call me back and we'll spend another hour on this. But no, as every teacher can imagine, boy, I don't know. I don't even know how to put this into words. You know, it was, it, it, it was, you can see I'm struggling here.
Yeah.
We were just thrown for such a loop. You know, our profession is communicating with our students and with our families. And we've been taught to do that directly, you know, in the classroom. And all of a sudden, as our district was scrambling, as every district was, in terms of training us as teachers, how to use the technology that was available to interact with our students virtually. And that was only if our students wanted to interact with us. So it was so difficult, but we did it. I compliment our district, really supported us in training us and helping us prepare for that. It was really difficult for all of us, the teachers, the students, the families, but we made it back. We're back in the classroom and, you know, we're moving along.
We're talking with one of Wisconsin's Teachers of the Year this year, as selected by our State Department of Public Instruction. Lori Dons is a science teacher at Superior High School, the high school she graduated from. And you're welcome to join our conversation about educators and science, the classroom, both indoors and out. 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You know, unless you are one or live with one, you gotta wonder what it must be like to be a teacher today, how the job has changed since back when you were a student. And at the same time, there must be some part of teaching that never changes. How incredibly rewarding it must be, sometimes, and how impossibly challenging it must be, sometimes. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and I wonder. That's why we're talking with one of Wisconsin's Teachers of the Year this year, as chosen by the State Department of Public Instruction. Lori Dons is a science teacher at Superior High School. And we invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. And the important teachers in your life, you can also email us, ideas@wpr.org. And Lori, I'd like to go back to your school, Forest, if I could, for a moment, and get some idea of the scope of lessons that can be taught in an outdoor classroom like this.
Sure, Lee. I think a lot of people stereotype outdoor education with science, and science definitely lends itself beautifully to the outdoors and teaching that. But in Superior, we do everything. For example, yesterday and now again today, I'm working with a middle school choir teacher, and they have an upcoming concert next Thursday evening, and the theme of their concert is Breaking Trail. And they've been learning about Emily Stone, who is the first female and first African-American female to, she walked the entire Ice Age trail last, I think the winter of 2020 during the pandemic. And so this teacher is incorporating Emily's story into her music, and they are out at the school forest yesterday and today, and we're learning about geology. They're rehearsing their music for the concert. There really are no limits to how we can use that setting to teach math, to teach writing, to teach music, art, science. We do it all out there.
So I would imagine there's also some real-life applications, just how we interact with our natural environment.
Most definitely, yes, yes. And, you know, we talk about the importance of the relationship with nature. We talk about relationships with the students. We do a lot of team building experiences out there. Yeah, we do. We talk about the economy of Wisconsin, the natural resources of Wisconsin.
Sure.
Groups come out and do service projects for us. So it is. It's just very applicable, you know, in all areas.
Lori Dons, what do you want your students to know about climate change?
I want them to understand definitely that this isn't a controversy of if there is climate change or not. I want them to understand that even though the news we get seems overwhelming and defeating, that every person can play a role in combating that. And if we all do our part, you know, we are all here to take care of our planet. And it's just small actions by all of us that will make a difference.
And what are some of the students' reactions to, environmental change, climate change, and how big it may be and how small it may make us feel sometimes?
You know, I think just in the history of teaching, one thing that hasn't changed, there are some students who just grab onto a topic or concept and become passionate about it and run with it and become very involved. Others politely listen. I hope they're hearing and absorbing some of what we're teaching. But I guess it's across the board, Lee. You know, it's I personally would love to see this huge engagement in a huge group of students. You know, like yes, we have to do something, but they are there. The pockets of students are there. We'll make it happen.
Well, and that I am. What are students curious about these days? What are some of the topics that are popular with them that sort of lights the fire inside them? What do they want to learn about, Lori?
Well, I think I'll speak a little generally instead of a specific topic. I think anytime we're teaching, whether it's science or, you know, literacy or whatever, anytime students relate it to themselves, very personally to themselves somehow, you see that engagement happen. You bring them right back, they're engaged, they're asking questions. For example, in biology, which I teach, we study cells. We study things like mitosis and meiosis. We study homeostasis, you know, and you kind of, they work with me and we get there. But as soon as we start talking human body, and like right now we're doing the typical, you know, frog dissections and things, and we're relating it to the human body, boom, they are right there. The questions are coming forth a mile a minute. So just in general, when we can make that real connection from what we're doing in class to their lives, then mm-hmm. it makes a difference to them.
And it's enlightenment, isn't it? And it helps them understand their life and their place in it.
That's the goal. Yeah. Yes, Lee, that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Superior High School science teacher Lori Donns is one of this year's Wisconsin Teachers of the Year and our guest for this half hour. We're talking about her work as an educator and forest manager, and you're welcome to join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. And Lori, we've talked on the program about the challenges that some schools, specifically in rural areas in Wisconsin, have faced in recruiting and retaining teachers. How are you seeing teacher shortages affect education in northern Wisconsin?
We are definitely seeing teacher shortages affecting our schools. What I hear, and I'm not directly involved in the hiring or anything, but I know, you know, not that many years ago, getting a teaching position was very competitive. There were many, many people vying for a position. Now our district is out recruiting at different job fairs. The substitute teacher shortage is a real issue. It's affecting the classrooms. We're definitely seeing and feeling it up here in northern Wisconsin.
And affecting the classrooms means affecting the students, right, Lori?
Well, it really does. It does. Definitely. You know, if we don't have a trained professional in front of the students, it's going to affect their learning.
So what would you say to somebody who would be considering a teacher but sees some of the challenges that teachers are facing and says maybe it's just not worth it or that's not a career worth pursuing? Is this still a career worth pursuing as you see it, Lori?
Definitely. It's hard. It's difficult. But when you have a daily, when you're working with your students, you know, and you just really spend time creating a lesson that you hope is meaningful, when you have those days when the students are engaged, they're having fun, they're learning, nothing matches that. I can't imagine a profession where you get that same feedback or feeling. So I think what I would tell people is the highs will be high. You're going to work very, very hard. The lows are low. You go through all of them, but I do feel that there are a few professions where you can reach as many people and build those relationships with people that I've been fortunate enough to do. So yes, it's worth it.
And what
we
about,
need teachers, you know?
Yes. Absolutely. As a lifelong student, we need teachers. But Lori, you know, as I look at this, where the new teachers just getting underway today, and as we are trying to, you know, manage a pandemic, possibly becoming an endemic, what advice do you give to these new teachers that are just entering into the classroom now?
The first advice I would give new teachers is the first thing you have to do is just the relationships with the students comes first. Students will not learn anything, if they don't believe that you know them as an individual, if you can't relate what you're teaching to them personally. So you have to really build those relationships with the students on that professional level. And be yourself. I had, when I was doing my classroom observations in my teacher training, I had a teacher who was my teacher in high school say to me as I was practicing, he said, "Lori, don't try to be something you aren't. Just be yourself and everything else will work out." So I would give that same advice to new teachers. It has worked out well for me.
Lori Dons, thank you for joining us this morning and congratulations.
Thank you very much, Lee. Have a good day.
You as well. Lori Dons is in the classroom right now, longtime science teacher at Superior High School, and she's one of five educators selected at Wisconsin Teacher of the Year for 2023. Up next is news and a story of our Wisconsin life, then the year-round business that is building up around Fiserv Forum in Lambeau Field, the Deer District, Titletown, and maybe the Beer District, too, someday? We'll see after the news. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn and for Kate Archer Kent. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about pregnancy during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Tens of thousands of people in the U.S. turn to fertility clinics every year to help them grow their families. For many of those hopeful parents, the process can be an emotional roller coaster, not to mention expensive. Alexandra Meyer of Milwaukee is one mother who tried in vitro fertilization and other methods when she was trying to get pregnant. And then the pandemic hit. Meyer shares her experience as part of the Pandemic Pregnancy Project, which is documenting the stories of families and their babies and how they've been affected by COVID-19.
I had fertility treatments lined up to start at the end of March 2020. Then COVID hit and the stay-at-home order came down. When I called the clinic a few days later, the nurse said, "I'm really sorry. We aren't doing any procedures. We're not seeing any patients. Fertility treatment has been deemed non-essential." So then, because this is something that for me was essential in order to have my child, having treatments put on pause and not knowing when the end date of that pause would be was super scary. And then I call in April. "Sorry, we can't do it this month." May. "We're really sorry. We can't do it this month either." In June, finally they say, "We can get you in." The first procedure we did was an IUI. And then 2 weeks later, I got another negative pregnancy test, like I'd seen so many times before. After three unsuccessful rounds of IUI, we decided to transition to IVF. My doctor told me, "If you get COVID during any point of your treatment plan, we have to stop. You're out all of that money. You have to pay for it again to do it again, and you have lost that chance." COVID cases in Wisconsin were surging, and I didn't know if a simple interaction would get me sick or not. We had been dealing with infertility for 6 years at that point, and I couldn't lose this chance, because I was finally feeling hopeful. The supply chain issues we had throughout the pandemic didn't just affect toilet paper. It also affected IVF meds. And when I went to the pharmacy to pick up these extremely expensive medications, they told me, "We don't know if we have them all in stock. And if I don't have these medications, then we might have to cancel the cycle." Luckily, they had it. They were able to do an egg retrieval after a lot of at-home injections. The egg retrieval gave us three viable embryos. After my embryo transfer, I tested early at home. It was so early in the morning. I looked at it and like, here it is again, another negative. So I leave it on the counter. I'm crying. I go back to bed. I'm done. This was a positive pregnancy test. And I'd gotten so used to negative tests that I just thought it would be negative. and I was too tired to look at it closely. I tested every day leading up to our blood draw, and the line kept getting darker. Like, it's happening. It's really happening this time. I just really hope that for those that do IVF during the pandemic, that they get their miracle babies too.
Alexandra Meyer of Milwaukee welcomed a baby girl in July 2021. They enjoy snuggling and reading books together. Meyer's story comes to us from the Pandemic Pregnancy Project, which is documenting the resiliency, humor, and heartbreak of pregnancy and birth during the COVID-19 pandemic. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Thank you, Maureen. Now, while the Milwaukee Bucks may be done for the season, the entertainment outside their home arena, the Fiserv Forum, will continue to draw crowds all summer long and into the fall. And while the Packers' full-team minicamp doesn't start until June 7th, you know people will be flocking to Lambeau Field this weekend and every weekend. Milwaukee and Green Bay are creating entertainment experiences around their pro sports teams in ways that go way beyond the game and their season. If you've been to the Deer District or Titletown, tell us what it was like this morning and what would you like to know about how these business districts operate. Join us. 1-800-642-1234 is a phone number, or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest, Aaron Popke, is the Director of Public Affairs for the Green Bay Packers. Aaron, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for the opportunity to join you.
Also joining us this morning, Audrey Grill, Senior Vice President for Rinka Architecture Firm. Audrey, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, and Audrey, I'll start with you from the architectural perspective. If, say, the Milwaukee Brewers came to you and said, we would like to build a multi-use complex around our stadium, why would we want to do such a thing? Why would a sports team want to invest in a neighboring entertainment complex?
Well, I think, as you've seen at the Deer District, which we designed, that it was... It catalyzed a lot of economic activity in the area, for sure. It spurred a lot of development that is still ongoing, and it's bringing people together in ways that we hoped it would, and beyond how we ever hoped it would. It's so there's economic benefits, but there's also the creation of new places for people to come together to create shared identity, which we've absolutely seen, and it's shown a new light on the city of Milwaukee, not only nationally, but internationally. It just, these types of developments, I think, are a huge opportunity to kind of capture energy that already exists in the fans and the residents and turn that energy into something really tangible.
And Aaron Popke, from the perspective of the Green Bay Packers, if you were to sit down with the front office of the Milwaukee Brewers, what would you say about the power of Titletown there?
Well, in a general sense, I'd agree with Audrey. I think we've seen sports. I mean, there's a great interest in sports. It's a convener. People love the energy around sports. I mean, even going down to youth sports, high school, college, professional, people enjoy the energy around it. And as we've seen with iconic sports facilities, you know, whether they be like Lambeau Field or newer like Fiserv, people enjoy being around them and what they represent. And you can definitely capitalize on the interest in that. I mean, that's what we've seen at Lambeau Field for years. And it's a no-brainer in many ways to extend that energy and excitement and that desire to be around there and then spread that to other uses, multi-use, commercial, residential, activities, those types of things. You know, people just love being around sports, and why not?
It was 2015 when the Packers described plans for Titletown as, in their words, one of the most aggressive real estate developments in all of professional sports. Aaron Popke, your Director of Public Affairs for the Green Bay Packers, what was the inspiration for Titletown?
Well, we had seen some other developments that were just starting to come online around the country that were capitalizing on that interest in sports facilities. You know, a lot of people point to the New England Patriots and what they did with Patriot Place. And that, you know, that's more commercial, maybe larger scale. You know, we were looking at doing something first east of Lambeau Field, and then ultimately decided it might be more feasible to do something west across the street, Ridge Road. And it was an area that was ready for development, certainly ripe for it. There was some older buildings, a strip mall, a Kmart that was getting ready to probably phase out. I know there was some lament over the loss of the blue light specials, but we saw a greater future for that and bought a parcel, just knowing that someone was going to redevelop. And why not be there and have a say in it to try and influence, you know, to something that would match up with Lambeau Field. And over the course of a few years, we bought some more parcels and decided to go for the whole piece. So ultimately we ended up with about 45 acres. And then we at the same time started planning for what would make sense to be there. And we used some consultants and then did some focus groups in the community. And the one thing that really resonated with everyone was let's make sure we have some activities planned, and let's make sure we're doing stuff in the winter to get us together and to keep us active and embrace the outdoors in the winter. And that's where we came up. We were always thinking of an ice rink, but then we had some other activities planned, but a lot of people talked about a sledding hill. So we went a little grander and created this tubing hill, which is now Aaron's Hill. And we are crazy busy through the winter with tubing and ice skating and other planned activities. So we took from a 45 acre development, we have about 8 to 10 acres that are devoted to public park-like space. And that's something that a lot of developers wouldn't do. Yeah. To devote that much space to public space. So we're really excited about what it was and what it has become.
That's Aaron Popke, Director of Public Affairs for the Green Bay Packers. Also joining us, Audrey Grill, Senior VP for the architecture firm Rinka. And Audrey, you are also the project manager for designing the Deer District in Milwaukee outside Fiserv Forum. What design intentions go into drafting a space like this? How do you even begin to imagine what's to go there and how everything's going to fit?
That's a great question. And one of the first things you do for a development or a project opportunity like this is really understanding the context, right? What was there? What's there now? Who lives around the area? What businesses are around the area? Understanding kind of, you know, what I mentioned before, there's energy that already exists, and how do you kind of capitalize on that and help to concentrate it and catalyze more energy? And so there's a lot of talking to people in the area. A lot of stakeholders were involved in this project, you know, I'm throughout sure. the city. And then for us, it really was about how do we make this a point of connection? And so as you'll see there, you know, the beer garden, there's a connector that connects to King Drive over to the east, where you already had a lot of bars and restaurants. And rather than filling that in with another building, we kept that as an open corridor to create many ways for people to get from one part of the surrounding neighborhood into the plaza and over to the Fiserv Forum. And it really, it's about stitching the neighborhood together.
Stitching the neighborhood together. And Audrey, now that it's built, how does the district holding up to what was in your head? How does it look compared to how you envisioned it?
The way it looks, I'd say it's beautiful. I'd say it's beyond our whole team's wildest dreams, and the way it's functioning even more so. I'd say we did a lot of diagrams of different scenarios for different size gatherings to be able to accommodate large gatherings. But, you know, we didn't know. You don't have a crystal ball to see how it's going to be embraced. And I'd say it's beyond our wildest dreams.
Audrey Grill from the architecture firm Rinka that worked on the Deer District in Milwaukee. Also joining us, Aaron Popke. He's from the Green Bay Packers. And we invite you to join our conversation about the big business year-round that's building up around our pro sports teams and the economic engine that has ensued. 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The headline from March's Milwaukee Magazine asks, why don't the Brewers have a beer district? It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and it's a question worth asking, considering the attention received by Milwaukee's Deer District and Green Bay's Titletown, and considering that the removal of the Park East Freeway ultimately made way for the Deer District. It's worth mentioning here that earlier this month, the Wisconsin DOT asked for community input on what to do with a 60-year-old stretch of Highway 175, known as the Stadium Freeway, next to American Family Field. Our guests, Aaron Popke from the Green Bay Packers and Audrey Grill from the architecture firm Rinka, stay with us and joining us with your questions this morning about the entertainment districts near our pro sports stadiums at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. And Aaron Popke, I want to ask something that Audrey referred to, and that is the importance of stakeholders and getting them on board when it comes to developments like these and making sure that everybody has some skin in the game and how you get everybody on board when it comes to stakeholders in a community like Green Bay. It's a big part of organizing, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. We, as I mentioned early on, use some focus groups in terms of what people would like to see for public opportunities. And we spoke of the public park and plaza and the activities we have. And we also met with representatives from the business community. I mean, Green Bay, like many Wisconsin communities, is, we feel, on the calm. In fact, U.S. News and World Report just ranked Green Bay as the third best place to live. So we're excited about that. They credited Titletown and Lambeau Field for part of that success. And we want to make sure we are in tune with all the other great developments that are going on. Really want to complement them. Downtown's got some exciting things. Some of our other communities have exciting developments. So we want to complement that activity and make sure we have what people are excited about. And part of that for us too is creating some density. You know, I mentioned some of the public place, sure, public spots there, but we've got an apartment building that is nearly half occupied now with 150 units. Ultimately, we've got townhomes. So we've got the residential, we've got an office building that's 80% full, five stories. So we're excited about that. And Titletown Tech, we feel, is something that is going to be beneficial to the long-term economic strength of our city and region.
Well, you got to explain Titletown Tech to me, Aaron.
Well, that is a partnership with Microsoft that is now a few years old, and it's a venture studio, innovation lab, and venture capital fund that we've partnered with Microsoft on, and really excited about that. We've got about 24 portfolio companies that are with us and working on various startups and sports and entertainment, environmental, logistics, and transportation. I mean, some pillars that we have strengths already in the community, and we think ultimately this could be a great benefit to the region. I mean, if we can get some companies to start up and then headquarter in Northeastern Wisconsin, that's something that'll be great long term. And we're experiencing some success already and excited about what that's going to do. So we've got a little bit of everything. We've got residential, we've got office, we've got the entrepreneurial space, all these things that are kind of feeding off the energy of Lambeau and certainly the season, you know, beginning with training camp all the way through, but definitely just something year round that the residents can enjoy. We're attracting people, you know, around the state. We're fighting to attract and retain talent. So we feel this is a key piece on a lot of fronts.
Aaron Popke, Director of Public Affairs for the Green Bay Packers. Also joining us, Audrey Grill, Senior Vice President for the architecture firm Rinka. And Audrey, one of the things I think about are the things we don't have to think about in a development and the accessibility of all things. But, you know, accessibility is something that has to be focused on when it comes to access for all and inviting everybody into a place like the Deer District in Milwaukee. How does an architecture firm can take things like the Americans with Disabilities Act and make it a functioning part of how everybody is invited to the Deer District?
Well, that's a great question. It's absolutely something that's, you know, on the forefront of our minds as we're making design decisions. And it's part of what we are constantly assessing. And we did so with the Deer District as well. You know, we had multiple iterations of design, designs for the plaza. And we reviewed with the city's accessibility point person, and you know, we refer to code, and we worked with a great landscape architecture and civil engineering team that made sure that, you know, everything from the slopes of sidewalks and ramps were going to be easy to navigate to, you know, just the dimensions, the clearances between certain landscape elements, that they would be wide enough to accommodate, you know, crowds and make it accessible at no matter what this, you know, the scale of the event happening there.
Heard in the news this morning that the Republican Party is still considering Milwaukee as their place for their 2024 political convention. 4 years ago, if there weren't the pandemic, the Democratic Party would have been in Milwaukee, and Fiserv Forum and surrounding area would have been a central piece of that. Are events like these something you took into consideration when developing the Deer District, Audrey?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. We anticipated a lot of different potential events happening within the Fiserv Forum as well as around the Fiserv Forum. So we also designed the buildings, you know, the buildings surrounding the plaza. There's the building that has Good City and the Mecca, and there's an event space up there on level two of that building that overlooks the plaza. There's a lot of different spaces to accommodate a lot of different size events. So you could have a large core event within the Fiserv Forum and then have smaller breakout events in some of the surrounding buildings, as well as events, obviously, outdoors on the plaza.
Aaron Popke, what's the future hold for Titletown in Green Bay?
Well, we definitely are excited about a number of different things. You talk about large events. You know, we've got the NFL draft that we're hopeful to land in the coming years.
Really?
Titletown. Yes, very much so. The Titletown would play a part of that in terms of the campus that the NFL would put together to host that draft. So we're excited about that possibility. Every summer we do a summer showcase. In fact, coming up in a couple of weeks, we've got some music planned on Saturday, June 4th with Jason Derulo. And in fact, we were just meeting with the village of Ashwaubenon, in which Titletown rests right across the street from Lambeau Field. You go from Green Bay to Ashwaubenon. The village has been a great partner in developing it, certainly, but we've got some ideas of how to utilize the space and make it an event easy setup for these types of events. So game weekends are pretty natural in terms of attracting people.
Right, that'll take care of itself.
Exactly. Events like this are something that we look at, and the further development that I discussed earlier in the business growth and entrepreneurship.
And we are just out of time this morning, but I want to thank you both for joining us. Aaron Popke, Director of Public Affairs for Green Bay Packers. Thanks, and good luck this season.
Thank you.
Audrey Grill, Senior Vice President for the architecture firm Renka, also the project manager for designing the Deer District, which is a destination. Audrey, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
You bet. Next hour, the morning show, what's the best way to love a person with an addiction? We tackle it for the hour. Stay with us. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent today, and you're listening to the morning show on the Ideas Network.